The Confessions of Harry Lareker, Volume 4. Chapter 24. The Gendarme. I had fortunately sufficient influence upon my fair friends to persuade them to leave Calais early on the morning following, and 2 hours before Kilkey had opened his eyes upon this mortal life, we were far upon the road to Paris. Having thus far perfectly succeeded in my plot, my spirit rose rapidly, and I made every exertion to make the road appear short to my fellow travelers. This part of France is unfortunately deficient in any interest from scenery, large undivided tracts of waving cornfields, with a background of apparently interminable forests, and occasionally, but rarely, the glimpse of some old time-worn chateau, with its pointed gable and terraced walk, are nearly all that the eye can detect in the intervals between the small towns and villages. Nothing, however, is flat or unprofitable to those who desire to make it otherwise. Good health, good spirits, and fine weather are wonderful traveling companions, and render one tolerably independent of the charms of scenery. Every mile that separated me from Calais, and took away the chance of being overtaken, added to my gaiety, and I flatter myself that a happier party have rarely traveled that well-frequented road. We reached Abbeville to dinner, and adjourned to the beautiful little garden of the inn for our coffee. The evening was so delightful that I proposed to walk on the Paris road, until the coming up of the carriage, which required a screw, or a washer, or some such trifle as always occurs in French posting. To this La Chère Mama objected, she being tired, but added, that Isabella and I might go on, and that she would take us up in half an hour. This was an arrangement so very agreeable and unlooked for by me, that I pressed Miss Bingham as far as I well could, and at last succeeded in overcoming her scruples, and permitting me to shawl her. One has always a tremendous power of argument with the uninitiated abroad, by a reference to a standard of manners and habits totally different from our own. Thus the talismanic words, oh, don't be shocked, remember you are in France, did more to satisfy my young friend's mind than all I could have said for an hour. Little did she know that in England only, has an unmarried young lady any liberty, and that the standard of foreign propriety on this head is far, very far more rigid than our own. La première rue à gauche, said an old man of whom I inquired the road, et puis, added I. And then quite straight, it is a chaussée all the way, and you cannot mistake it. Now for it, Mademoiselle, said I. Let us try if we cannot see a good deal of the country before the carriage comes up. We had soon left the town behind and reached a beautifully shaded high road, with blossoming fruit trees, and honeysuckle-covered cottages. There had been several light showers during the day, and the air had all the fresh fragrant feeling of an autumn evening, so tranquilizing and calming that few there are who have not felt at some time or other of their lives, its influence upon their minds. I fancied my fair companion did so, for, as she walked beside me, her silence, and the gentle pressure of her arm, were far more eloquent than words. If that extraordinary flutter and flurry of sensations which will now and then seize you, when walking upon a lonely country road with a pretty girl for your companion, whose arm is linked in yours, and whose thoughts, as far you can guess at least, are traveling the same path with your own, if this be animal magnetism, or one of its phenomena, then do I swear by Mesmer, whatever it be, delusion or otherwise, it has given me the brightest moments of my life. These are the real winged dreams of pleasures which outlive others of more absorbing and actual interest at the time. After all, for how many of our happiest feelings are we indebted to the weakness of our nature? The man that is wise at 19, j'ai l'infâme own compliment, but I assuredly do not envy him, and now, even now, when I number more years than I should like to confess, rather than suffer the suspicious watchfulness of age to creep on me, I prefer to go on believing, even though every hour of the day should show me, duped and deceived. While I plead guilty to this impeachment, let me show mitigation, that it has its enjoyments. First, although I am the most constant and devoted man breathing, as a very cursory glance at these confessions may prove, yet I have never been able to restrain myself from a propensity to make love, merely as a pastime. The gambler that sits down to play cards, or hazard against himself, may perhaps be the only person that can comprehend this tendency of mine. We both of us are playing for nothing, or love, which I suppose is synonymous. We neither of us put forth our strength, for that very reason, and in fact like the waiter at Vauxhall who was complimented upon the dexterity with which he poured out the lemonade, and confessed that he spent his mornings practicing with Vader, we pass a considerable portion of our lives in a mimic warfare, which, if it seem unprofitable, is, nevertheless, pleasant. After all this long tirade, need I say how our walk proceeded? We had fallen into a kind of discussion upon the singular intimacy which had so rapidly grown up amongst us, and which years long might have failed to engender. Our attempts to analyze the reasons for, and the nature of the friendship thus so suddenly established, a rather dangerous and difficult topic, when the parties are both young, one eminently handsome, and the other disposed to be most agreeable. Oh, my dear young friends of either sex, whatever your feelings be for one another, keep them to yourselves. I know of nothing half so hazardous as that comparing of notes which sometimes happens. Analysis is a beautiful thing in mathematics or chemistry, but it makes sad havoc when applied to the functions of the heart. Mama appears to have forgotten us, said Isabella, as she spoke, after walking for some time in silence beside me. Oh, depend upon it, the carriage has taken all this time to repair, but are you tired? Oh, by no means, the evening is delightful, but, then perhaps you are newy, said I, half pettishly, to provoke a disclaimer if possible. To this insidiously put query I received, as I deserved, no answer, and again we sauntered on without speaking. To whom does that chateau belong, my old friend? Said I, addressing a man on the roadside. A Monsieur le Marquis, sir, replied he. But what's his name, though? Ah, that I can't tell you, replied the man again. There you may perceive how, even yet, in provincial France, the old respect for the aristocracy still survives. It is sufficient that the possessor of that fine place is Monsieur le Marquis, but any other knowledge of who he is, and what, is superfluous. How far are we from the next village, do you know?
About a league.
Indeed. Why, I thought La Scarpe was quite near us. Ah, you are thinking of the Amiens Road. Yes, of course, and is not this the Amiens Road? Oh, no, the Amiens Road lies beyond those low hills to the right. You pass the turn at the first barrier. Is it possible we could have come wrong? Oh, Mr. Le Recker, don't say so, I entreat of you. And what road is this, then, my friend? This is the road to Albert and Baron. Unfortunately, I believe he is quite right. Is there any crossroad from the village before us now, to the Amiens Road? Yes, you can reach it about 3 leagues hence. And we can get a carriage at the inn probably? Ah, that I am not sure of. Perhaps at the Lion d'Or you may. But why not go back to Avel? Oh, Mrs. Bingham must have left long since, and beside you forget the distance, we have been walking 2 hours. Now for the village, said I, as I drew my friend's arm closer within mine, and we set out in a fast walk. Isabella seemed terribly frightened at the whole affair, what her mama might think, and what might be her fears at not finding us on the road, and 100 other encouraging reflections of this nature she poured forth unceasingly. As for myself, I did not know well what to think of it, my old fondness for adventure being ever sufficiently strong in me to give a relish to anything which bore the least resemblance to one. This I now concealed, and sympathized with my fair friend upon our mishap, and assuring her, at the same time, that there could be no doubt of our overtaking Mrs. Bingham before her arrival at Amiens. Ah, there is the village in the valley, how beautifully situated. Oh, I can't admire anything now, Mr. Le Recker, I am so frightened. But surely without cause, said I, looking tenderly beneath her bonnet. Is this, she answered, nothing, and we walked on in silence again. On reaching the Lion d'Or we discovered that the only conveyance to be had was a species of open market cart drawn by 2 horses, and in which it was necessary that my fair friend and myself should seat ourselves side by side upon straw. There was no choice, and as for Miss Bingham, I believe if an ass with panniers had presented itself, she would have preferred it to remaining where she was. We therefore took our places, and she could not refrain from laughing as we set out upon our journey in this absurd equipage, every jolt of which threw us from side to side, and rendered every attention on my part requisite to prevent her being upset. After about 2 hours traveling we arrived at the Amiens Road, and stopped at the barrier. I immediately inquired if a carriage had passed, resembling Mrs. Bingham's, and learned that it had, about an hour before, and that the lady in it had been informed that 2 persons, like those she asked after, had been seen in a caleche driving rapidly to Amiens, upon which she set out as fast as possible in pursuit. Certainly, said I, the plot is thickening, but for that unlucky mistake she might in all probability have waited here for us. Amiens is only 2 leagues now, so our drive will not be long, and before 6 o'clock we shall all be laughing over the matter as a very good joke. On we rattled, and as the road became less frequented, and the shadows lengthened, I could not but wonder at the strange situations which the adventurous character of my life had so often involved me in. Meanwhile, my fair friend's spirits became more and more depressed, and it was not without the greatest difficulty I was enabled to support her courage. I assured her, and not altogether without reason, that though so often in my eventful career accidents were occurring which rendered it dubious and difficult to reach the goal I aimed at, yet the results had so often been more pleasant than I could have anticipated, that I always felt a kind of involuntary satisfaction at some apparent obstacle to my path, setting it down as some especial means of fortune, to heighten the pleasure awaiting me. And now, added I, even here, perhaps, in this very mistake of our road, the sentiments I have heard, the feelings I have given utterance to, what I was about to say, heaven knows, perhaps nothing less than a downright proposal was coming, but at that critical moment a gendarme rode up to the side of our wagon, and surveyed us with the peculiarly significant scowl his order is gifted with. After trotting alongside for a few seconds he ordered the driver to halt, and, turning abruptly to us, demanded our passports. Now our passports were, at that precise moment, peaceably reposing in the side pocket of Mrs. Bingham's carriage. I therefore explained to the gendarme how we were circumstanced, and added, that on arriving at Amiens the passport should be produced. To this he replied that all might be perfectly true, but he did not believe a word of it, that he had received an order for the apprehension of two English persons travelling that road, and that he should accordingly request our company back to Chantrain, the commissionaire of which place was his officer. But why not take us to Amiens, said I, particularly when I tell you that we can then show our passports. I belong to the Chantrain district, was the laconic answer, and like the gentleman who could not weep at the sermon because he belonged to another parish, this specimen of a French Dogberry would not hear reason except in his own commune. No arguments which I could think of had any effect upon him, and amid a volley of entreaty and imprecation, both equally vain, we saw ourselves turn back upon the road to Amiens, and set out at a round trot to Chantrain, on the road to Calais. Poor Isabella, I really pitied her. Hitherto her courage had been principally sustained by the prospect of soon reaching Amiens, now there was no seeing where our adventure was to end. Besides that, actual fatigue from the wretched conveyance began to distress her, and she was scarcely able to support herself, though assisted by my arm. What a perilous position mine, whispering consolation and comfort to a pretty girl on a lonely road, the only person near being one who comprehended nothing of the language we spoke in. Ah, how little do we know of fate, and how often do we despise circumstances that determine all our fortunes in the world. To think that a gendarme should have anything to do with my future lot in life, and that the real want of a passport to travel should involve the probable want of a license to marry. Yes, it is quite in keeping, thought I, with every step I have taken through life. I may be brought before the mayor as a culprit, and leave him as a benedict. On reaching the town, we were not permitted to drive to the inn, but at once conveyed to the house of the commissaire, who was also the mayor of the district. The worthy functionary was long since in bed, and it was only after ringing violently for half an hour that a head, surmounted with a dirty cotton nightcap, peeped from an upper window, and seemed to survey the assemblage beneath with patient attention. By this time a considerable crowd had collected from the neighboring alehouses and cabarets, who deemed it a most fitting occasion to honor us with the most infernal yells and shouts, as indicating their love of justice, and delight in detecting knavery, and that we were both involved in such suspicion, we had not long to learn. Meanwhile the poor old mayor, who had been an employé in the stormy days of the Revolution, and also under Napoleon, and who full concurred with Swift that a crowd is a mob, if composed even of bishops, firmly believed that the uproar beneath in the street was the announcement of a new change of affairs at Paris, determined to be early in the field, and shouted therefore with all his lungs, Vive le peuple, vive la charte, à bas les autres. A tremendous shout of laughter saluted this exhibition of unexpected republicanism, and the poor mayor retired from the window, having learned his mistake, covered with shame and confusion. Before the mirth caused by this blunder had subsided, the door had opened, and we were ushered into the bureau of the commissaire, accompanied by the anxious crowd, all curious to know the particulars of our crime. The mayor soon appeared, his nightcap being replaced by a small black velvet skullcap, and his lanky figure enveloped in a tarnished silk dressing gown. He permitted us to be seated, while the gendarme recounted the suspicious circumstances of our travelling, and produced the order to arrest an Englishman and his wife who had arrived in one of the late Boulogne packets, and who has carried off from some banking house money and bills for a large amount. I have no doubt these are the people, said the gendarme, and here is the card descriptive. Let us compare it, 42 or 43 years of age. I trust, M. Le Maire, said I, overhearing this, that ladies do not recognize me as so much. Of a pale and cadaverous aspect, continued the gendarme. Upon this the old functionary, wiping his spectacles with a snuffy handkerchief, as if preparing them to examine an eclipse of the sun, regarded me fixedly for several minutes, and said, Oh, yes, I perceive it plainly, continue the description. 5 feet 3 inches, said the gendarme. 6 feet 1 in England, whatever this climate may have done since. Speaks broken and bad French. Like a native, said I, at least so said my friends in the Chaussee d'Antin, in the year 15. Here the catalogue ended, and a short conference between the mayor and the gendarme ensued, which ended in our being committed for examination on the morrow. Meanwhile we were to remain at the inn, under the surveillance of the gendarme. On reaching the inn my poor friend was so completely exhausted that she at once retired to her room, and I proceeded to fulfill a promise I had made her to dispatch a note to Mrs. Bingham at Amiens by a special messenger, acquainting her with all our mishaps, and requesting her to come or send to our assistance. This done, and a good supper smoking before me, of which with difficulty I persuaded Isabella to partake in her own room, I again regained my equanimity, and felt once more at ease. The gendarme in whose guardianship I had been left was a fine specimen of his caste, a large and powerfully built man of about 50, with an enormous beard of grizzly brown and grey hair, meeting above and beneath his nether lip. His eyebrows were heavy and beetling, and nearly concealed his sharp grey eyes, while a deep sabre wound had left upon his cheek a long white scar, giving a most warlike and ferocious look to his features. As he sat apart from me for some time, silent and motionless, I could not help imagining in how many a hard-fought day he had borne a part, for he evidently, from his age and bearing, had been one of the soldiers of the Empire. I invited him to partake of my bottle of Medoc, by which he seemed flattered. When the flask became low, and was replaced by another, he appeared to have lost much of his constrained air, and seemed forgetting rapidly the suspicious circumstances which he supposed attached to me, waxed wondrous confidential and communicative, and condescended to impart some traits of a life which was not without its vicissitudes, for he had been, as I suspected, one of the Garde. The old Garde was wounded at Marengo, and received the quad honor in the field of Wagram, from the hands of the Emperor himself. The headlong enthusiasm of attachment to Napoleon, which his brief and stormy career elicited even from those who suffered long and deeply in his behalf, is not one of the least singular circumstances which this portion of history displays. While the rigors of the conscription had invaded every family in France, from Normandy to La Vendée, while the untilled fields, the ruined granaries,